This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear about Culinary Camp and Unpacked, two local programs that help feed kids from low-income families during the summer. But first, at least 14 states have banned high-interest payday lending. But providing these short-term high-interest loans is still a multi-billion dollar industry in the United States. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is taking comments right now on a proposal to end payday debt traps by requiring lenders to make sure consumers have the ability to repay their loans. While many would like to see an end to the payday lending industry, others point out that this is one of the few sources of loans for millions of people, many of whom don't have credit histories or access to credit cards or traditional bank loans. And joining us to discuss payday loans and the dangers of predatory lending are writer, social innovator, and speaker Vicki Robin, who co-authored the best-selling Your Money or Your Life, Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Achieving Financial Independence, and Krista Simeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And you can join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Vicki and Chris, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Mark, it's always a pleasure to be here, and Vicki, thank you for joining us.
You know, Chris. Okay. Chris, we got some data today from the Federal Reserve that just kind of points to how big an issue debt has become in our country.
The New York Fed, and this kind of plays right into Vicki Robin's bestseller that she wrote with Joe Dominguez many years ago. It's a comprehensive, complete look at how your relationship with money is much more important than the money itself. And today, the New York Fed, they release this once a quarter, released their latest figures on overall amount of debt, different types of debt, what kinds of debt are falling into delinquencies. So it's just the New York Fed has a webpage that's just chock full of fascinating stuff. One of the things that really jumped out at me is that the different kinds of debts, that delinquencies actually have been going down for most since 2010, except student loan debt. And so when people get finished with college, they typically have, you know, a lifetime of memories, a diploma, and frequently a lot of bills. And it's not knowing how to handle all those bills and then at the same time wanting more stuff that can lead to problems. And next thing you know, you're using one credit card to pay off another, and then you're rolling these credit card loans, and then that stops working. And so you're faced with a choice. You may have to bounce a check, or you go to a payday lender.
Right. You may find yourself using a payday lender in those circumstances.
Exactly. And of course, Vicki, this book that Vicki Robbins wrote, I mean, I've got the hard copy book. I got it in paperback. I got this. My book's 24 years old, Vicki, but it's still.
That beats me.
Yeah. This book, actually, as I was doing research for this topic, and this book showed up on a number of guests, and I may have spoken with your partner in this, like Joe Dominguez, before he several years ago when the book first came out. Inc. Magazine had a study of the 10 best personal finance books of all time. This book, Your Money or Your Life, comes in number 7, and it also makes the top 5 personal finance books of all time on lifehacker.com. So it has withstood the test of time, Vicki. Thank you. So, Vicki, we'd like to talk about how people can avoid getting into trouble, but what are the steps? What should someone do if the choice is between bouncing a check or going to a payday lender?
It's sort of a question of, like, if you're bleeding, do you go to the emergency room or do you go, you know, try to fix it yourself? I mean, you're talking about a situation that has gone long out of control. And so I don't know what the best thing to do is at that level of first aid. You know what I mean? It's like you're way beyond, you're way into the dark side of this thing. So my recommendation to people listening, because I would say most of you are not in the emergency room, somebody just shot me level. You are in a precarious situation where you're not taking care of your financial health, and you could start dialing that back. And, you know, the advice, the practical financial advice is not much different from what it was when the book first came out. I mean, number one, to understand that if you go into debt, who wins if you go into debt, especially if you buy something that the pleasure of it passes quickly and the debt of it stays forever. If you buy something that actually isn't producing value in your life, the only people who win are the producer of that product and the bank that owns your debt. You know, the debt, if you think of debt not as a privilege, is a way to keep up with the Joneses or whoever the Joneses are these days, is a way to present yourself well in society. You know, if you don't see debt as some sort of like stopgap thing that you can stick into any process in your life so that you can have what you want on an immediate level, but rather you see debt as sort of basically, you know, selling yourself into slavery, because maybe the bank doesn't own your body, but they own your debt, and they own your future. So I'm just like want to really emphasize that debt seems to be a big fat paycheck from somebody, the bank, that permits us to live beyond our means. Not saying that there aren't people who are strapped and, you know, who the only way they're going to put groceries, you know, food on the table between jobs is to manage their debt such that they can actually buy some food and pay back later. I'm not saying an intelligent use of debt. I'm saying a sort of a loose attitude toward debt that puts you behind the eight ball. And when you realize, here's like the magic numbers, is it's called the magic of compound interest. We were taught this when we were kids, you know, in my generation. And basically it says that money, anything at a certain percent of increase, like let's say you put money in the bank and you get, you know, 3.5% interest, within 20 years, that will double. There's a doubling rate. The magic numbers are 7 and 10.
Yes.
10% interest, your money will double in 7 years. Right? Okay.
Correct.
So imagine that the payday lender is lending you money at 20% interest. What you're going to have to pay back is doubled very fast. It is actually selling your future to the payday lender. So basically, get creative. Anything you can do to stay out of the zone of debt is going to be important for your financial health. That would be my basic perspective.
Yeah, Vicki, that's such a great point. Today, before we came in, I looked at a number of representative interest rates, and this is available everywhere. You can go to bankrate.com or a number of different websites and see that mortgage rates for a 15-year fixed might be below 3%, 30-year fixed, 3 and change, car loans, normal car loans in the 4s, unless the manufacturers are giving money away, student loans going between 3.5 and 6, depending on the kind of loan. Perhaps credit cards fixed, according to Bankrate, about 11 to 16% for variable. I looked at one of these payday lenders and representative sheet here from them for 14 days. Now, this is in the great state of Ohio, too.
Well, I thought the Ohio had capped
it. They capped interest rates
at 28%.
But they call it something. You can call it something else and get away. So for 14 days, there's a fee of $26.19 for 14 days, which works out to an APR. This is on the company's, which shall remain nameless. This is from this company's own website. It works out to an APR of 682.81%. So I just, the rule of 72, I'm not sure it was built to go that fast.
I know.
So your advice about how to stay away from having to get involved with payday lending is eminently useful. You and Joe Dominguez, who wrote this book all those years ago, spent several years, how about 10 years, going out of your way to live frugally?
That hasn't stopped.
Okay.
And define frugal for us, Vicki. How frugal are we talking?
Well, you know, the way I describe frugality is sort of like street smarts about money. It's about things don't cost what they cost what you pay, get smart, don't pay retail. It's really about, it's about resourcefulness. It's about what I used to call a high joy to stuff ratio. It's getting the maximal pleasure out of every dollar that you spend because you've worked hard for that dollar. It's not about deprivation. It's about, actually, I find it I say I buy my freedom every day with my frugality. You know, that I, if I can meet my needs for less money gloriously, you know, and feel clever, smart, and a little bit smug from having done so, that to me is frugality. And so it's, you know, it's anybody. If from somebody who is like on the verge of payday lending to the ultra rich, everybody has an opportunity to have a savvy, resourceful relationship with money. And as a matter of fact, some of my wealthiest friends are some of the people who are smartest about money. They know how to stretch a dollar. So that's my sense of frugality. And the idea that you would go through a frugal period of time in your life and then give it up, for what? You know, for me, it's like, why give up a set of talents and skills that are eminently sensible and that will allow you? I mean, I'm 71 now, and I've been frugal, and I have a very comfortable life, using a lot of the strategies and tools that are in the book and also things that I've learned since then that are just common sense about how to master money in your life. And mastery doesn't mean how to make $1 million.
So learn to maintain my old refrigerator?
What?
So learn to maintain my old refrigerator, Vicki, instead of going out and buying a new one?
No, I wouldn't say refrigerator. I'm not maintaining my refrigerator. I'm not talking about that. You know, now cars are computers. I'm not talking about maintaining your car. But I'm talking about buying a car that gets, you know, 50 miles per gallon instead of 25 or 12. You know, you have to think. You think about things that you use over the course of the lifetime of using that thing. And if you have a 12-mile-per-gallon car that you got, a beater that you got on Craigslist, but you spend five times the amount you spend for the car on the gas and repairs. This is what I mean. It's really about a wise use of your most precious resource, which is the time you, the precious hours you have of your life, and some of those you invest in making money, and you should make that money go as far as it can. I mean, people think about investing like, oh, when I have savings, I'm going to invest some money in some, you know, la-la stock or, you know, mutual fund and make a bundle of money. I say investing is investing in yourself and investing in spending the least amount you have to get the best product for your needs. It's all about your relationship with money and a sense of vitality in your relationship with life.
We will continue our discussion, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and joining us this afternoon, writer, social innovator, and speaker Vicki Robin, who co-authored the best-selling Your Money or Your Life, Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Achieving Financial Independence, and Chris DeSimeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter.
You know, Vicki was just talking about ways to simplify things and be frugal, and she's being very modest, actually, because she's done a lot of work, not only in the financial side of that, but also in the how to just personal living kinds of things, and spent a good deal of time in writing about growing food and living off the land and eating things that you grow. And Vicki, did you know this? I was shocked. Today, of course, is August 9th. I'm still just reeling in the excitement from August 8th, which I learned is National Sneak Some Zucchini Onto Your Neighbor's Porch Day. I'm not making this up. One of the seed companies we use a lot. We have a couple hundred tomato plants, a couple hundred pepper plants at our farm. And you know, I think about this because a lot of times you see people, you know, it used to be that if you went to work, you had to go out and get something to eat. And whether what you were eating was good for you isn't the point. The fact is you were spending money on it. And when you think of, well, okay, I'm going to get a burger and fries. Well, next thing you know, that $10 adds up. That might be $10 a day. That's $50 a week. You know, next thing you know, it's $2,500 a year that just went goodbye forever, plus all the earnings on it, when you could have just you didn't even have to sneak some of these zucchini onto your neighbor's porch. You could have just eaten them yourself and save a lot of money and probably be better off nutritionally to boot. What kind of relationship have you noticed between people who look at the world that way? Are they happier with even though they might not get to eat at a five-star restaurant or care to eat at a five-star restaurant, but are they happier than someone who, because they grew the food themselves and had that sense of connection to it?
Well, I actually can't get inside with my little sort of like emotional camera and see everybody's happiness. But I will say that what I find in general is in our society, we've become less and less competent at more and more things. So that we, the fact of just feeding ourselves, not even growing our own food, but just feeding ourselves has become a professionalized, commercial activity. It's like, well, I don't trust myself to boil some water and throw some green beans in there and, 3 minutes later have cooked green beans. I don't trust myself to do that. So I have to buy the prepackaged green beans or the green bean and something frozen dinner. And so there is something about there's many links between the money frugality work and the food. But one of the main links is that, a lot of people are not getting training how to cook. There's no home ec in school. They're not getting, they're not getting their parents, both parents are working maybe, and they don't get, cook in the kitchen with their parents, cook a meal. There's so much, skill and talent about feeding yourself, which is so simple, really, that is now disappearing. People assume, I don't have time to cook. So there's a cooking deficit disorder going on, and which renders us helpless, and so we go out and we buy the hamburger for lunch, whereas we could have, bought X pounds of burger on Saturday, made it into patties, put it in the freezer. Every day you cook a burger and put it, there are strategies, very simple strategies for how you can actually take whole ingredients and turn them into healthy meals that are taste better and are better for you than stuff you get in a restaurant. And maybe I think that this whole thing about status, that, I can go out to a restaurant and so I think there is something about that, about just feeling embarrassed that I can't keep up with, that I have to bring my own lunch and everybody else gets to go out. I just think those of us who have, sort of healthy, sappy souls could just start to change that status thing of like, my status is I know how to cook this stuff. I know how to make my own lunch. I'm happy to share my skills and talents with everybody.
And Vicky, it sounds like you're talking about being resourceful, being a resourceful person and building your resourcefulness.
That's my whole gig is that the world is there for our taking, but not taking as in buying through credit cards or selfishness. The world is there for us to participate in skillfully. And for example, turning zucchini into zucchini chips, zucchini. I just got a recipe for zucchini pizza crust. So, it's like zucchini bread, like learning if life gives you lemons, make lemonade, but if life gives you zucchini, you've got meals for a week.
Yeah. And in fact,
I've eaten off one zucchini for a week.
Yeah. And in fact, Vicky, the folks who put out the National Zucchini Day, August 8th, I'm not sure if it's the second Monday of every August or if it's always on the 8th.
I bet it is.
I'm not sure.
I bet it is, Chris.
But the article that, and you can just Google National Zucchini Day, August 8th, but there's a great, there must be hundreds of recipes for different ways you can enjoy zucchini. But I guess, it really gets to the point that so many times people think, well, gee, if I can just save a little extra money, my investment fees, I'm gonna look for the cheapest, the lowest cost mutual fund. But maybe, and that's, costs are important in investing, and there are a number of factors that are important in investing. But if you're wasting money and not saving it in the first place, then costs are meaningless because you're wasting money on things that you don't need.
And at the risk of sort of like seeming like I'm on a total tangent, the other thing that August 8th was this year just a little bigger picture education. Its role, it's overshoot day, ecological overshoot day. And so basically what this day is it's the day in the year when we've used up the whole biological capacity of the planet to support us. You know, like the sort of the interest rate that comes off of the basic resource base of the planet, the air, the water, et cetera, et cetera. And in 1986 was when we started using more of the planet than we have. We started going into ecological debt. And when I wrote Your Money, Your Life with Joel, World Overshoot Day was October 12th. In other words, we went into ecological debt after October 12th. Now it's August 8th. So the context of all of our buying and spending and making a life is that we're sort of like, there's sort of like this climate change in terms of resources, which is we're slipping. We're in debt. You know, we're talking about payday lending. This is like the ultimate lending. And so I think that it's just worthwhile for people who want to be frugal, want to be resourceful, to think about their debt, think about how they design their financial lives in light of that there are things that are actually crashing that are in nature, not just in the markets. So with that little tangent about August 8th and World Zucchini Day and World Overshoot Day, we can go back to the practical topic.
Back to payday lending. Which, interestingly, by the way, the CFP, the Consumer Financial Protection Agency.
Yeah, Bureau.
Bureau is, as Mark mentioned earlier in the show, there is quite a battle brewing on the payday lending front, and there are people lining up on both sides. And studies, the New York Fed, it's also on their website. Again, they've got a study on it, and it's putting up both sides of the picture. Whether is it good or bad? So,
there are those who will say it's the only source for a lot of people.
Well, and even Forbes magazine says, you know, the only people who don't like it are the 10 to 12 million people a year who use it. So, again, it's a lot of the issue seems to be in rolling this debt over. It's they can't make it on the first at the end of 2 weeks, so they roll it over again. Now the magic of compounding is working against them.
Right. And the prime issue the CFPB is looking at is the idea that the lender should be making sure that when they get people in the door that these people are capable of repaying those loans so that they don't have to keep refinancing and recycling the loan and incurring more and more fees.
Well, and in a way, I guess it's sort of like if you only need two zucchini plants, don't plant 10 or else you'll end up leaving them on people's porches at night.
Exactly.
My question here, though, you guys, is that, you know, this is sort of like Les Graham's very hot topic of guns. But, I mean, you know, the payday lender, how is that payday lender in the heat of the moment of somebody's like, I need money for groceries, how is that person going to verify that the borrower can pay it back? How can we make those people, the payday lenders, the gatekeepers? Where else in society do we need to be addressing this problem so that we don't have that many desperate people? What is driving them to the desperation? I think it's really important to not just consider these things emergency room issues,
right?
But to take a look at the health of the, you know, why are people falling off the edge, and what other places can we put in stoppers that will help them? I mean, do you agree with this?
I do, and I guess that's why your book is still showing up on all these best personal finance books, because it is just full. It's a cornucopia of tools, of very practical tools. The copy I have, of course, is print, but your tools are available online and at various websites and on your Facebook page too. So it's having, you know, a set of tools that you can use, which your book, Your Money or Your Life, so amply provides.
And if I'm reading you correctly, Vicky, you're saying empower yourself. Get yourself in a position where you don't have to use debt.
I'm saying that, and I'm also questioning. I'm questioning our focus only on the individual. you know, I say empower yourself, but also question the society that put you in this situation.
Yeah.
And let's, as a society, start to dedicate ourselves, hopefully, you know, we can through political tools or, you know, basically entrepreneurial tools, we can start to put in healthier systems so that people who empower themselves are not working against, you know, not working against an undertow of the great sucking sound into debt, you know, like just the siren call. You know, you're surrounded by the siren call to go into debt, and your only option is to strengthen yourself, to strap yourself to the mast so you can go through that channel, you know, go through the mall and not overspend. I think we need to not only empower individuals, but question the dynamics of the consumer culture that pressures us towards this kind of debt.
Great point.
Let's talk with Roger in Centerville. Hi, Roger. Roger, I think you have your radio up, so if you turn that down, and you are on. Okay, Roger, we'll have to bypass you there. Let's talk with Vernon in Northside. Hi, Vernon.
Yeah, hello. Interesting topic. I have a quick contribution and then a question. After I work all day and then work out, I get real hungry. And two things, I used to stop for Starbucks, which kept me awake at night and cost me $4 or $5 and too much fat and sugar. So I eliminated that, and I started bringing a little Ziploc bag and a cooler of veggies in the car, and then look around for a source of clean protein. If I passed a place that had a salad bar, I'd hit that real quick or something, you know, or sometimes I'd, you know, but, you know, So I found that saved me quite a bit of money every month, you know, nearly $100. My question is this, though, to the expert on the book there. If you try to micromanage all this, you know, saving, in other words, a mentality of scarcity versus abundance, I have a friend who ended up being a hoarder. He started out with a cool idea, like picking up broken skids to heat his house with because it burns hot and he doesn't have to clean out his chimney, and then he'll use logs. Well, he ended up thinking, well, hey, you know, when he was dumpster diving the skids, he saw some other things that people were throwing out. I can use that. And his wife left him. Now he's raising his son because he's a hoarder, because it started out with this whole thing of trying to save money, his particular way of doing it.
He went to the extreme.
I hear you talking philosophical, but people are struggling. How can we do it? My question is, how can you simplify it and tailor this to an individual's personality? In other words, if I'm a guy that likes to collect stuff because I can see a practical use. I mean, I can make something out of this. I can use this broken tool and fix it, you know, which you end up collecting crap that you don't need. So how do you tailor this to an individual? You got any quick ideas on that?
Well, so I would say, number one, congratulations, because what you did is precisely what we're suggesting, really, is that you notice that you have a need, which is like, you know, good food at the end of the day after your workout, you know, and you're still sort of mobile, you're not home yet. So you figured it out. You know, you got yourself a cooler, you got to go, you know, bags of veggies. So I think that these things become systems. It's like you set up a system, and now you don't have to think about that system. You just have a system. When you don't have a system, the system ends up being, you know, buying food out and about, you know, or buying the Starbucks coffee. So all of these things where you start of like, okay, this is how I spend my money on a daily basis. What are more clever ways, less expensive ways I can meet those needs, even better, clean protein, et cetera. I think it's a perfect story. I understand the hoarding mentality. I have developed back 40s. I, in the old farmer terms, your back 40s where you have all your resting equipment. And I am hyper frugal, and I have to, like, I've almost had to overcome that tendency. So I don't know what to do with your friend. You know, I don't know what to do about that. The thing I have done that's allowed me to, like, let go of a lot of stuff that I've hoarded is to be part of I live in a small town on an island, a fairly large island in the Pacific Northwest, and I've come to understand that basically the thrift stores are cycling useful materials through my community and making everybody's lives better. I can release what I don't use into the thrift stores, and or I can have yard sales, but yard sales are, you know, then it's more time. I release things that I don't need. They're of use in the community. By doing that, I'm more part of the community. And so when I have a need, I know that, you know, I can go back out to the thrift store and I may have, like, given away 10 tools, but the one tool I need will probably be there and I can get it, use it, and even release it back.
But so, it sounds, Vicki, like you have to consciously remind yourself to do this.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, and in your book you say unclutter, unclutter, declutter.
I'm not saying I'm perfect. But I, you know, it's just recently I'm of an age where you start to have arthritis, and I have a possession I love, which is my electric bicycle. But this year I was not getting on it because of the hip thing. So I finally went, like, I have a friend who wants to an electric bicycle. I've given it to her on long-term loan. She's a happy camper. Her husband's a farmer. It may come back to me as zucchinis. You know?
And you're a happy camper now too, right?
Yeah, so I feel better because this thing isn't just, like, sitting in front of me every day, you know, reminding me that I can't ride it. She's happy because she has a bicycle. We're in a deeper relationship with one another, and I'm sure it'll come back as zucchini or something. there is this quality. See, the idea of hoarding is that, you know, as you say, it's a scarcity mentality. But part of that mentality is that we've trained our minds to think we're on our own, you know? And when you shift from you're on your own to I'm part of a community, and if I release resource into the community, it actually does come back around. It's that sort of abundance cycle that everything is moving through, and when I need, I will have that feeling of abundance.
Hey, Vicki, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We're up against a break here, and we greatly appreciate you joining us this afternoon. And Chris, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks,
as
Vicki.
Well. Writer, social innovator, and speaker Vicki Robin, who co-authored the best-selling Your Money or Your Life, Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Achieving Financial Independence. Also, Chris DeSimeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. Listeners are reminded the information provided on today's show is general in nature and may not apply to their personal investment situations. Coming up, we'll hear about local efforts to feed kids from low-income families this summer.